Okay.
Good Lord.
It's all right. Hey, Merrick, what's going on?
Don't even try to listen. Hey, what's going on? Hang on. How many computers do we have backing up this show?
Well, I'll let you know right now, Merrick, that Yankee Z, a.k.a. Goal Line Ninja on Twitter, says, thanks for the heads up that the stream is live. Got my tape recorder ready. So there you go. We got that going
everyone,
for us.
By the way, who sent the kind notes, the supporting notes, the supportive. I felt so bad for a producer, Sam. That was like the sorriest group text we ever got. Poor guy was so apologetic over something he had zero control over.
Yeah, for those who don't know, we did a show earlier this week that never made air. It was streamed, but it never got archived because of a computer crash. And and it was, you know, true to form, as you know, I'm like, we're not just saying this because you can't hear it. It was a really good show. Like, we had John Chaika on, the GM from the Coyotes. Like, it was a really, really, really good show. But now lost to history, Merrick.
Yeah, lost forever. Now, I saw a tweet from someone referencing lost Doctor Who episodes. Is that true? Is that a thing?
Yeah, but
is
in that
number of,
I think in that case, it's like the tapes, like there were Doctor Who episodes that they taped back in the, you know, 60s, but then because of the way TV went, they just like use those tapes again and like recorded over them. This is different.
So much of hockey history was lost that way too. I can't tell you. You know, I was having a conversation with Jim Huff, who still is a producer at CBC. And when the WHA was on, he was the producer of Toronto Toros hockey. Mike Anscombe was the host. And, you know, Huffy produced all the games. And it was done for global television. And, you know, a lot of those tapes, like after the game ran, and, you know, they taped them, cut up highlights, they just taped over them. Like so many, like, historical events and games, like, unless you recorded it off the bird or somehow recorded it off television, like so much of hockey history is just complete folklore now because the tapes have been just taped over. I think a lot of hockey games that were that way outside of, you know, having the home team's recording of the game, you know, the single camera shot at center ice that you just use for practice. You know, the Rangers did that. The Maple Leafs did that. This is well before Roger Nielsen got all the credit for doing so. And that was pretty much the only way that some of these games exist. But so much of WHA history has been completely lost. And to a WHA geek like me, Greg Wyshynski, and that's kind of like you losing some, you know, Doctor Who episodes.
Well, it is, but it's also reminiscent of how my dad would, who, by the way, still uses VCR tapes. My dad would label, like, my dad probably has about 1,000 VHS tapes that are labeled and chronicled and everything else, but he would use the same tapes over and over again, and sometimes he'd forget to change the label on it. So I'll hunker down to watch like some great movie or some old TV show, and then right in the middle of it, it'll cut to like the ESPY Awards or something on ESPN. It's just like
it's
the
like,
worst
it's like
feeling.
It's like your Heidi moment, right? It's like your Heidi moment. Something, and the murderer is live from Las Vegas. It's the ESPY.
It really says something about being a New York Jets fan that the Heidi game is like number 50 as far as like the oddest things that have ever happened to the franchise. But all right, let me ask you a question about the Penguins, okay?
What's up?
Sean Gentile of the Sporting News writes today that Phil Kessel right now might be the best story in sports. In your opinion, what's the more impressive story or impressive narrative? What Matt Murray's doing or what Phil Kessel's doing?
Phil Kessel's a bigger name, sexier name, chronically underachieving, has been maligned in Boston, has been maligned in Toronto, was maligned in Pittsburgh for a large percentage of this season. The Matt Murray story is one that we're more familiar, I think, with, you know, the rookie stands on his head goalie story. We've seen it. I mean, take your pick, you know, Ken Dryden was certainly a biggie. Patrick Waugh, for all those, there was always a Steve Penny or a Blaine Locker or the Jim Carrey. Like, we've seen that story before. I think the Phil Kessel one may be more impressive. Just the way that, you know, at every turn, this guy was, you know, and it's slandered and cast off and brushed off. And, you know, it's always been said you can't win with Phil Kessel in your lineup. Well, no, you can. You just can't win if you build a team around Phil Kessel as a complimentary player. You can certainly win, and Pittsburgh's proving that right now. And punctuated by the greatest single response in an interview that we've seen in quite some time. It was a very hello. So I'm just getting locked off here at the NMAX Centrium in Red Deer. Yeah, that's good. It's at a barrier placed in front of me. This is the concourse here at the rink. The question could not have been more Pierre Maguire, and the answer could not have been more Phil Kessel. Like, everything about that, didn't it scream, like, I love it when stereotypes come to life? And that was a stereotypical Pierre Maguire question and a stereotypical Phil Kessel-type answer. Everything about that moment was so hockey-perfect to me. What about you?
Yeah, the exchange, if you didn't hear it, was Pierre Maguire asking his cool guy hockey shorthand question for are you feeling okay after such a high-paced game?
How's your breath?
How's your breath? And Kessel responding as if he had just been asked about the smell of his breath.
It's amazing. And then he almost like could barely contain himself laughing after, right? Like at that point, he just probably wanted to put a towel on his head and really have a good belly laugh.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Realizing
what he had just done. I don't know. To me, it was such a perfect moment, a perfect interview moment that captured completely in about 10 seconds the personality of both people that were involved in the interview. It was a found perfect hockey moment and should be applauded as such. Don't you think?
Oh, I think so too. Yeah, and like you said, I mean, it couldn't have been two more perfectly cast people on either ends of that question in that moment.
But, like, you know, you want this, like, you know how Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali sort of, you know, rose at the same time and they were just great with one another. Like, don't you want that to happen in hockey? Like, have someone have such a rapport with someone, or, you know, awkwardly fall into this "your chocolate is in my peanut butter" type situation. But don't you just want to have it again? Like, almost have Pierre Maguire and Phil Kessel sort of reprise the roles of Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell. Because you don't really have that in sports anymore, do we? We don't have, like, because you were dying after every Ali fight. Okay, what's the interview with Howard going to be like? We don't have that in sports. I think we have a shot at it now with Phil Kessel and Pierre Maguire.
You know what my Cosell Ali was? It was Ron McLean and Gary Bettman, and that we can't have that anymore.
Yeah, that was something that you always look forward to. And it was at the All-Star game, and the commissioner was very uncomfortable answering those questions at a time where it was supposed to be a celebration of the game. But Ron just kept going back to, you know, lockouts and players' rights. you never see that. Like, it's, I mean, a lot of that is too the rise of the league and the rights holder and working as partners. And, you know, even though you pay a lot of money for the rights, there's still a certain relationship of working together you still have. But you're probably right. That's probably the last sort of let's choose confrontation over conversation moment that we've had in the NHL.
Yeah, for sure. The thing about Murray that's interesting, and I think you're right. I think at this point, Kessel's the bigger story, the better story, and by virtue of that, might actually be the favorite for the Conn Smythe if the Penguins win the Cup. I mean, it takes that magnitude of a story to overshadow a rookie goalie doing what he's doing for the Penguins. And maybe it's because they're not winning every game 1-0, but all the kid's done is come in, save their ass in the first round, and then outplay Braden Holtby in the second round, and now he's playing brilliantly in the third round.
Tell you what, I remember, and the thing about Kessel doing it too, it's like, you look at him on the bench, and it's like, he's just like, chubby guy, skates fast, and shoots pucks really quick too, and accurately.
Yeah.
Like we're seeing a freak, and I love it. I mean, all superstar players have something very unique about them, whether it's a skating style, a shot style, a way they move, and a way they think. Like, think about Phil Kessel for a second here. Here we are in 2016, and it's the rise of personal trainers, and You know, celebrity trainers like Matt Nichol and Andy O'Brien and Gary Roberts, like, this is how you're supposed to be a hockey player, right? And then there's Phil Kessel. Right now, his leg strength is good. I mean, lower body, you know, is really strong enough for Kessel. But does he look like one of the fastest players in the NHL? No.
No.
And he can shoot the puck in full stride, like, which is one of the hardest things you can do with accuracy. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, like, he just wants to have a nice skate around. And he doesn't want his, you know, jaw to be bruised when he has his post-game pizza or burger. Like, he wants to have a nice, safe, non-touch game. But whatever, that's his game. We shouldn't expect him to be anything other than what he is. And that's a guy that goes up and down the wing really fast and scores goals.
And not only that, but with that line, and actually with most of what the Penguins are doing under Mike Sullivan, like, it's incredible how much second guy in puck support there is on the forecheck. Like you saw that Hagelin goal last night where Kessel knows he's got Hagelin cutting in the middle. He fires the puck as hard as he can off of Vasilevskiy, knowing that terrible coverage by the Lightning on that play. But part of it's that Hagelin's so damn fast that none of the Lightning forwards can get back on the backcheck. There's so much puck support from that Penguins team when they're on the forecheck. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's great. It's impressive. This series may be over fast, man. That was just like domination last night.
Yeah, especially
this thing may be over quick.
It could have been 100-1 to 2 based on how Vasilevskiy had to do everything to keep them in the game last night.
Yeah, this is some impressive stuff, man. Like I did not think for a second the Penguins had this level they could get to. Mm-hmm. I really didn't. Listen, Jim Rutherford has earned that nomination for General Manager of the Year as well. And I know that, you know, there are a lot of pieces already in place, but for how many years did they try to quote unquote fix the bottom six?
Yeah.
The top six gets you to the playoffs and the bottom six wins the championship. Like, how long did the Penguins try to fix that?
Oh, all they had to do.
Fumble, 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 fumble,
yeah.
Fumble, fumble.
All they had to do was trade for a 40 goal scorer and put him on the third line. There you go.
The thing is, like, we keep hearing about homegrown talent and draft and develop. You know, the line that's really doing it, the headline, it's all trade. And it's all cast off. It's all bad news bears.
It's incredible.
It's all, okay, Hagelin can't play in the Western Conference. Nick Bonino bounces around. You can't play here in Vancouver. Like, it's all guys that weren't wanted, like, seriously not wanted by their team. And for a couple of players, not wanted by a few teams. You know, look at the resume. Kessel, not wanted by Boston, not wanted by Toronto. Bonino, not wanted in Anaheim, not wanted in Vancouver. Hagelin, not wanted in the Rangers, not wanted in Anaheim. It's the bad news bears, dude. It's a great story. It really is.
It is. Now, but listen. I'm not going to take back all the jokes I made about Jim Rutherford being really old, because they were really funny. Like the idea of a guy shuffling around on his front porch in his slippers, eating a Werther's original. All of a sudden, the phone rings. He's like, "What? General manage the Penguins?" Like, that's great. But I will take back all of the ridicule that we gave the Penguins for basically saying that this was going to be a short-term plan. Like, you know, we looked at this team and said, "You've got to really make some long-term changes here." They said, "Look, we're going to bring Rutherford in. He has an expiration date. He's going to, you know, train the guys underneath him to maybe take over one day." And lo and behold, like, he's aggressively turned this team around. Has everything worked? No. Like, he's the first one to admit that some of the trades didn't work, and he'll probably be the first one to admit that you know, bringing in Mike Johnston to quote unquote get this team playing playoff hockey was a mistake too. But everything he's done post Mike Johnston has been golden.
But here's the thing. Let's not lose sight of one thing either. And maybe we'll never know. Maybe we'll never know the real answer to this. I mean, Mike Johnston though wasn't the first choice, right? I mean, there was
Willie Desjardins was.
Peters, there was Willie Desjardins. Like, there were a couple of like significant NHL coaches that said no before they got to Mike Johnston. It wasn't as if Rutherford went out there and said, "We need to get the guy from Portland." This was like they had other designs on who was going to manage that bench.
No, right, exactly. But lo and behold, there you go.
Here's what's great about all of it. Here's what's great about all of this is that the NHL is such a copycat league. You really want teams like Pittsburgh, whether you like the Penguins or not. Like, you don't have to like the Penguins to like this one thing about them. If they're successful, more teams will play like this.
Mm-hmm.
More teams will put the accent on speed and offense and creating that way and cheating, getting out of the defensive zone. Isn't that what we've been after all along? We talk a lot about Dallas. We talk a lot about the Washington Capitals this year. And man, we hope that they're successful so other teams will, you know, put the accent on that syllable. Wouldn't it be great if Pittsburgh did this and everyone kind of started to follow suit?
Dude, you could make the argument that three of the four teams in the conference final are quote-unquote playing hockey the right way. Like, the Lightning, for all of their defensive prowess, are super fun to watch. They skate. The Penguins skate. The Sharks skate. And the Blues skate begrudgingly because Hitch realized he had to skate a little bit to win in this league.
Yes, there's ice and you have blades. All right, might as well skate, I guess.
Right, exactly.
You might as well skate.
Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, that's a good line. It's a good line.
No, but
it's fun times, man.
It's fun times. And now looking over at the Western Conference, I mean, I think the Blues. are also in a little bit of trouble. I know they have a sterling road record, but I saw the way the Sharks play on home ice, and unless things have dramatically changed in that regard, the way they played in Game 2 is the way they played in the Shark Tank for most of these playoffs.
Power play, man. That San Jose power, I know it's been good for a long time, and I got roasted on Twitter for saying, hey, Steve Spott's done a great job with the power play. And I think he has, but it was in as if it was a horrible power play to start with. I mean, you just cannot give the man advantage to San Jose. You can get away with it for a game here and there, but there's just too much quality and they'll sting you. So they'll just... And here's what I can't understand. How is pulling the beard not a penalty?
Yeah, pulling the hair is a penalty, right?
Right, and it's frowned upon. Like, you see someone pulling hair, it's like, oh, like, this used to happen in the 70s pre-helmets, right? Remember, there's a great video, I think I showed it to you last time you were at my house, that interview with Dave Schultz. Whenever he'd fight Gary Howard of the Islanders, Howard would always grab his hair and punch. So before an Islanders-Flyers game, Schultz got his hair, like, buzzed. And, God, I wish hockey were like this. He comes to the rink, and one of the reporters on camera asks, like, what's with the haircut? He goes, oh, I got my Gary Howard haircut. I'm all set for tonight's tilt. And I'm just like, oh, man, I just wish hockey could be more like that. I got a haircut, so he can't pull my hair when we fight. So I got it down to the bone.
Exactly. It's fantastic. Couple more things to hit on in our time together here. Are we going to see Stamkos in this series?
I don't know. Not a doctor. Don't know. I don't think it's one of those situations where, like, it's different. It's different than just coming off like an ankle injury or a knee injury, where you're like, yeah, you know, if it were the playoffs, he'd play. But it's regular season, so you take a like. This is a little bit more significant, isn't it? Like, and I don't know what it is now, but ever since, like, Dmitry Yuskevich, we see more and more situations like this each and every year in the NHL. And I'm at a complete loss.
You mean the blood clot stuff?
Yeah. Like, the first one that I can remember was Dmitry Yuskevich.
Yeah.
Can you remember one before that? And then he started to come back and play. And, like, I think he, like, lied to the team so he can get back in the lineup.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's one of those, like, well, he's close enough. You know, so we'll stick him in there. So
it's a long.
The
uncomfortable.
Like, really, I have no clue.
The uncomfortable conversation to have about blood clots is that there are theories as to why they develop in athletes, and they all track back to some level of performance enhancement. Not saying anybody who's had them in the National Hockey League is doing that. Just saying that's the science out there.
Is part of it too, like, not moving, like, long flights? I know is an issue.
It
for
could
some.
Be.
I just had a 5-hour one here to get to your Red Deer, but, like, isn't, like, being on like long flights, so I have to always sort of keep standing up. And thankfully now I have one of these Apple Watches that reminds me to stand up when I'm on a flight after 20 minutes or so. Like, I don't know. Like, it's kind of the blood clot thing is bizarre to me. I've heard the same theory about steroids, but. I'm probably the wrong guy to ask about steroids because I don't sort of fall in with the rest of the steroids.
Because you're such a pill head.
No. I just don't think that it's, I mean, we treat it like it's this horrible thing. And we treat it like almost like, okay, if you take steroids, all of a sudden you're going to become an amazing athlete. Like, for whatever reason, in this sports culture, we refuse to have a serious conversation about steroids. Because all we want to do is treat it as if it's cheating and have a conversation revolving around that. As opposed to revolving around what steroids actually do. But that's probably another podcast down the road.
Pause on that for a second. Because, there is obviously performance enhancement in the sense that in certain sports in which that require strength, like, for example, hitting a ball over a wall, it's an unfair advantage versus, you know, what's happened historically. But your argument, and I think it's the interesting one, is the use of them for recovery.
Well, that's what all steroids do. It just helps you recover, and most of them. It just helps you recover. It just allows you to work out more, right? And I'll tell you what. I think I've told you this before, and I think I've said it on this podcast. If I played in the NHL, if I was a pro athlete, God, would I be gassed. Oh, my God. Like, wouldn't you? Like, when the difference between wearing a name tag on the front of your jersey or wearing your nameplate on the back, and we're dealing with, like, dollar amounts that can set yourself up, your children up, and your grandchildren up for life. You wouldn't do steroids? I would do it in a flash.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I wouldn't. I wouldn't, because I would take my vitamins and say my prayers.
I always get a laugh too. People look at like baseball players get caught with steroids and look like just like, you know, middle relief pitchers that have like beer guts and all that. It's like, no, you understand these are used for muscle recovery. So
well,
they can get, you don't just like stick a needle in your ass and all of a sudden, you know, you look like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but that's the great – baseball's the biggest joke, right? Like every sport's got their performance-enhancing issues. Every sport's got their drug issues, right? But
yeah.
like Lenny Dykstra just basically came out and said he was popping HGH like they were like Skittles, right?
Yeah.
And like
yeah.
as a Mets fan who watched Dykstra come up, and when he came up, he, you know, he was built like Ryan Nugent Hopkins basically, and then he goes to the Philadelphia Phillies, and now all of a sudden he looks like, you know, the abomination. Like, come on, like no, baseball fans were so delusional. That's why I've got no respect for guys like Mike Lupica, who wrote the big romantic book about the Sosa McGuire home run race, and wrote it like, you know, rosy, flowery baseball prose, the boys in the field, and childhood dreams. And come on, you head in the sand, nincompoops. You know exactly what's going on baseball.
Yeah. I mean, the last one, I mean, this is for a longer podcast. I'm going to punt here because I've loaded up radio interviews all day. But this idea that, you know, that there's a level playing field in sports and steroids skews that. If you think for a second there is a genetic level playing field between athletes, then I think that feeling is completely laughable. If anything, you could make the argument that for many athletes, steroids actually does level the playing field.
Yeah.
Because if you're not genetically blessed, this is the way to get there.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, listen, why are you in Red Deer again? For something? What is the deal you're doing there?
It's a Memorial Cup, baby. And I think NHL Network's picking up a few of the games as well. I just saw the London Night Skates and the Red Deer Rebels and the Brandon Wheat Kings are coming out here in a couple of seconds. So.
All right.
Should be a good tournament. I'll get underway Friday night at, what time, 8 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central, with the host Red Deer Rebels facing off against the powerhouse London Knights. Should be a good one, buddy.
Fantastic. And I guess lastly, going back to the beginning of our conversation, the HBK line, Hagelin, Bonino, Kessel, apparently Shawn Michaels is going to have something to do with Game 5 in Pittsburgh, according to Shawn Michaels.
Oh, really?
That's what Shawn Michaels said. That's what the Heartbreak Kid himself said.
Oh, I love it. DX chop at center ice after the anthem?
Yeah, but don't they have to, I mean, don't the Lightning have to respond in kind, and we hear the dulcet tones of Real American by Rick Derringer playing over the PA as Hogan comes out in his Lightning blue?
Yeah, very good. Although he hasn't really been seen in public so much since the Gawker suit, has he?
Well, not only the Gawker suit, but him dropping the N-bomb all over other recordings that were published by Gawker. That probably hurt him a little bit, too.
That's not good. That's what we refer to as a CLM, career-limiting move. Well done. Well done,
right.
Jerry.
All right, dude. All right, we'll talk to you next week, bud. All right.
Catch up. Bye.
The great Jeff Merrick in Red Deer. Is that home of the Sutters, or did the Sutters all coach there? I forget. Or did Brent Sutter just coach there? Or does he own the team? God,
he owns the team.
Thanks, Sam. Brent Sutter owns the team. I remember when Brent Sutter was coaching the Devs.
He does everything there.
The whole thing was like, well, you know, if things don't work out, he can go back to Red Deer. That was the same thing with Dale Hunter. Ah, things don't work out, he just go back to Junior and be the boss of bosses there. Don't you like it better when there's something on the line? Don't you like it better when it's like, I need in the words of George W. Bush, to put food in my family, and I need this job. I can't just like coach for 3 minutes and then F off back to Junior and take and coach that team. Anyway, Phil Bork's coming up on the show to talk about the Penguins. Not trying to make this a Penguin love fest, but they are the story in hockey right now based on what they did in Game 3. And Sammy with that, also Matt Riegler. Matt Riegler's going to do game show for Friday today. With that, Sammy, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Now, would he come out in a suit or a track suit?
Come out
or
in a Leafs jersey.
Except the cup in a Leafs jersey. Oh, I love when your pro wrestling comes out. Oh, my God.
I know.
And now, accepting the Stanley Cup from Commissioner Bettman, Steven Sanko.
Wow. NWO intro based on Steven Stamkos' heel turn. It's brilliant stuff. Anyways, game three, Blues and Sharkies tonight as we do this podcast. Obviously, you know, like I said, I'm a little concerned about how the Blues haven't really played a good game yet necessarily. They won game one, but lost two of the three periods, lost all three periods in game two. And the Sharks just maraud people on home ice. So a little nervous there for them. There's a new episode of Puck Soup that came out today, with me and Lozo. We talked to Tom Cavanaugh from The Flash. We also talked about the Blues and Sharks, and I want to reiterate that thought here for a second. I really want the Sharks players to advance to play for the Cup, but I really want the city of St. Louis to advance to have them, their players play for the Cup, if that makes sense. Like, Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, Brent Burns, Pete DeBoer, all those cats getting a chance to win the Cup would be brilliant. But from a sports town perspective, yeah, I kind of do want the town whose team hasn't been back to the Cup final in decades, the city whose NFL team just abandoned them, the city of St. Louis, after all this pain and having Chicago look down their nose at them for so many years. Like, I'd like for the sports town of St. Louis for them to get a shot at the Cup, if that makes sense. And actually, I got a story coming out in Puck Daddy, hopefully today, maybe tomorrow, but hopefully today, talking with Ross Greenberg, the executive producer of all the NHL's stuff on TV, 24/7, the Epic show, and now this new show on Showtime, which sounds like it's going to be pretty good. And he made the point, and it's a good one, like, for all the playoff narratives that we've been dealing with, Kessel and Crosby and, you know, Murray and the Lightning with the injuries and the Sharks with the beards and all this other jive that's been written about, the story of the St. Louis fan has not really been written about. Okay, well, one St. Louis fan has been written about, the one behind the bench. But the St. Louis Blues fandom, I think, has not necessarily been explored quite yet as being as long-suffering as they've been. And I find that intriguing. If the Showtime show is going to delve into that, I think it's going to be pretty interesting, for sure. But I'm also interested to see what this show looks like when you have all of these narratives kind of spelled out for you, I guess would be the term. Because, you know, the problem with, like, 24/7 and the problem with that Epic show is that they're an hour long. You got to have a lot of filler. And you really don't know week to week what you're going to end up with. This show's going to be a half hour long, and it's the playoffs. Like, it's pretty obvious what the stakes are. You don't got to make up a bunch of narratives and a bunch of plot lines for this stuff. Joining us now on the line, radio analyst for the Pittsburgh Penguins and obviously a damn good player in his own right, Phil Bork joins us here on Merrick vs. Wyszynski. It's just me, Greg. Merrick's off in Red Deer. Phil, how are you?
I'm doing good, thanks.
All right, so Sidney Crosby can't be stopped now. Is it as simple as just breaking through and scoring a goal like he did in overtime to get his game back on track? Is it as simple as that, or what is it now about Sid?
Well, I think that's the easy analysis, is to, you know, see Sid score an overtime winner like he did at number two and think the floodgates are going to open up. It doesn't always work that way. You hope it does. And for Sid, I mean, you know, for most talented players and goal scorers, that they look for that one, and they, you know, they kind of feed off of that emotion of tickling the twine and seeing the black puck hit the white net. And, you know, the goal that he scored last night on the power play, the one-timer, was a thing of beauty. And so, yeah, I guess that, you know, Sid's like a lot of other talented players in this league, that once they get that little bit of confidence, and it's probably the most overused word in all of sports, is confidence, that, you know, when you don't have it, you look like the worst player in the league, and when you have it, you know, it doesn't seem like anything can go wrong. And, you know, for the Penguins, they're hoping that, you know, this is bigger and better things for Sidney Crosby, as well as Evgeny Malkin, you know. And Gino's a guy right now whose confidence is not that great, but, you know, he's watching what Sid's doing right now. And I, over the past few years, more times than not, when Sid catches fire, Gino has that kind of internal competition on the ice, and he wants to be as good as Sid. And if that's the case, then look out, Lightning.
Yeah, for sure. I don't want to get you in trouble at the next NHL Players Association mixer, but when you hear a national analyst question Sid's work ethic, what's your reaction to that?
Well, to be quite frank with you, I really don't give a you-know-what what other people think of my statements when it comes to, you know, really being embarrassed by not only Jeremy Roenick, but also by Mike Milbury. I mean, it's appalling is the word that comes to mind. And talking to other NHLers that maybe aren't as vocal as I am, they're voicing the same thing. Maybe they don't have an avenue to voice their opinions, or they just don't want to put themselves out there. I really don't care. I just can't believe that, you know, I know what Jeremy Roenick was trying to say. He's basically saying, you know, Sid's got to be better. Sid's got, and I agreed with that part. But the question is work ethic. It's almost like Jeremy Roenick at times doesn't really have that filter in between the brain and the mouth. That he just kind of, you know, just lets it fly.
Yeah.
And that's that to me, that doesn't make you a good analyst. You need to have a little bit of professionalism when you are trying to critique or analyze a player.
That's the thing. And again, like I said, you know, earlier this week, like of all the criticisms of Crosby, like, and you can criticize Sid, right, about
sure.
any number of things in his career. But the work ethic thing, man, the kid's a rink rat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a head shaker. And you know what? But there's a bit of a history here. If you go back a few years, even when Sid was coming, you know, going through his concussion, you know, Jeremy Roenick said some kind of a statement where, you know, he's sick and tired of waking up in the morning and seeing Sidney Crosby's face on the TV talking about this and talking about that. He's like, just get back on the ice, for heaven's sake. You know? And I was like,
yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like, I mean, are you just does he have that much latitude that he can pretty much just kind of vomit at the mouth anything he wants to say with no repercussions at all?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a head shaker for me.
What was your thing with Milbury? Because, I mean, obviously Mike got in a little bit of hot water for kind of saying, hey, the Blues should slash to injure, should hit to injure. Was that, I mean, I kind of get what he was saying, but it also kind of bugs me that he's a bit hypocritical. Like when he takes a run at Orpik and calls him a predator for the way he hits and then turns around and says, you should slash and try to break someone's wrist. It kind of came off as hypocritical to me.
Yeah, that was bad enough. I mean, sounding very Neanderthal. But I think the part about, you know, hitting a guy and hitting him from behind and give him a little bit of a concussion. I tell you, I was watching at the time. My jaw almost dropped to the floor. I mean, considering what's going on right now with the concussion lawsuit against the National Hockey League, I'm sure that Gary Bettman and all the lawyers at the National Hockey League were thrilled to know that their lead analyst that's trying to sell the game and trying to promote, you know, being a safer game and a more pleasurable game to watch would just spew a statement like that without thinking at all of what's going on with concussions. It's a complete head shaker for me. I can't believe that this is who's representing our game.
Yeah, indeed. I think a lot of fans have your back on that. It seems like NBC's taken a bit more heat this postseason than they have in previous ones. But let's get back to the Pens for a second here. I was talking with Merrick before about the Phil Kessel story and about the Matt Murray story. Which one's the more impressive one for you at this point in the postseason?
Boy, that's a good question.
Right? Because Phil, I'll give you some filler. Like when it comes to the Conn Smythe, I mean, it's all about narrative. It's all about the storyline, right? And at this point, I think a lot of people are looking at Phil and saying, "What a great story!" You know, kicked around in Toronto, you know, belittled by the media, and now he's the leading scorer in the playoffs and leading the team to victory in two consecutive rounds. And then you got the kid goalie, who's basically Cam Ward, Ken Dryden, whatever you want to call him, who saved their bacon in round one and now is playing well enough to keep his job with Marc-Andre Fleury breathing down his neck.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah, thank you for the filler because you gave me some time to think about it. And as great as Phil Kessel has been, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think it's fair to any player to start talking about Conn Smythe until we get to the Stanley Cup final. It's just not right because we're not there yet. And I don't know anybody right. who's won a Conn Smythe without getting to a Stanley Cup final. But I think Matt Murray is probably the guy that, you know, has caught a lot of people off guard as far as fans and broadcasters, but I think more than anything else has caught teams the Penguins have played in the playoffs off guard because they don't really know who is this guy. I mean, we've heard about him down in the American Hockey League, you know, with all the shutouts last year, but, you know, nobody really knows who he is. You don't really have a read on him. And I think he's frustrated a lot of players, whether it's the Rangers or the Caps and now the Tampa Bay Lightning, because you just don't have a book on him. You just don't have any mental memory of going up against this guy, and I think he's got a lot of shooters confused.
Mm-hmm. What's Mike Sullivan kind of, I mean, it was a tough call because the three guys who were up for the Jack Adams all were really deserving too, but doesn't get a Jack Adams nomination, obviously is getting a lot of accolades for changing the way this team has played. What's been the most impressive thing for you Penguins under Mike Sullivan?
Boy, I can't just give you one thing. I have to give you a couple things. I think number one,
please do.
The relationship that he's formed with the star players, whether it's motivating them and getting them to play better than they think they can play or holding them accountable for, you know, any kind of shortcuts or undisciplined play or any of that that's crept into their game, he's been able to pretty much eliminate that. I think the relationship he has with all the other players on the team, whether it's the guys from Wilkes-Barre, that he has defined the role, what is expected. He's brutally honest but stays professional at the same time. I think he's a really good communicator as far as expressing the passion he has to win while staying under control. That's the biggest thing is we're a much more disciplined team, that we're emotional, we're passionate as a team, but we're able to stay in control where years past that we would unravel when things didn't go our way or frustration let in or other teams were pushing our buttons. I have not seen that under Mike Sullivan.
Yeah, it's been, and he's a fiery guy too. So it's like, it's been pretty impressive to watch. What's your impressions of the Lightning? I mean, the Lightning really took it on the chin in game three. And I think a lot of people now are, you know, as we see in these playoff series, every time a team wins a game, now all of a sudden everybody runs to the other side of the boat. And now it's the Penguins that have all the momentum and stuff. But the Lightning are a very impressive team. What happened, do you think, to them in game three, and what needs to happen for them to get back on track in game four?
Well, I think they were just victims of the Penguins' depth and speed. They won a lot of loose puck battles. They got to a lot of loose pucks. They support the puck. They're tenacious. Their work ethic as a team can just be overwhelming. That you feel like, okay, well, we did a good job against Crosby. We did a good job against Malkin. And now all of a sudden, holy Moses, here comes this Bonino line. Okay, and then let's say you do a good job. All of a sudden, Matt Cullen's lighting the lamp. You know, so you have to be sitting on the bench going, what the HE double hockey sticks do we have to do here to contain these four lines? Because it's just rolling one after another after another. And then if we do catch a break or are able to penetrate them, their goaltender's coming up with a big save. So it's got to be frustrating to play against the Penguins.
Yeah, sure thing. And I guess finally, you got any impressions over that Western Conference series that is going on with the Blues and the Sharks?
Really impressed with the Sharks. I have a tough time believing that the Blues are going to win another game. I'll be honest with you. They're lucky to be split 1-1. Just the look and the tone that Coach Hitchcock had after game number two was, holy moly, we got a tiger by the tail here. And just the way Joe Thornton's playing, I've never seen Joe Thornton play like this, both ends of the ice. He's got a little bit more of a shooter's mentality this year than he has in years past, where he's always a pass-first guy. He's ready to pull the trigger. I mean, Brent Burns is amazing. They've got some stabilization and goal. I'm really impressed in what the San Jose Sharks are doing, and I think Peter DeBoer is one heck of a coach.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing about Joe is that, like, the last thing I want for this guy is for him to get, because he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's going to get in the Hall of Fame. Is to have that conversation during induction weekend of, you know, oh, he never won the cup though. And he's just like, come on now. So I'm kind of rooting for Joe because I feel like out of a lot of players that I've seen in the last like 15, 20 years, that's the one guy who if he gets a ring, it's going to validate so much about his legacy.
No, fair enough. I'll be honest with you. One of my criteria for guys I think just should be in the Hall of Fame is winning a Stanley Cup. But there are a few exceptions of players that, you know, I think longevity has a big part of it that, you know, you look at a player like Eric Lindros, you know, that never won a Stanley Cup and the longevity wasn't there. And that might be kind of a reason why he hasn't got in yet. But, you know, the way that Joe Thornton's been able to do it year after year after year, I mean, I don't know how many years he's played in the league now. I'm going to say close to probably about 15 if I had to guess. And the numbers he consistently puts up, I think even if he doesn't win a Stanley Cup, he's a Hall of Famer. But I think having that ring, having that cup is definitely an exclamation point. And there's usually no more conversation. If you're able to put up the numbers over that long of a time and you win the Stanley Cup, you're pretty much in.
Exactly. Phil Bork, great stuff. Thank you so much for your time, man. We'll talk to you down the line.
All right. Anytime. You know, I enjoy coming on your show. Anytime. I enjoyed it.
This was brilliant. Oh, there you go. Good hockey talk. Put that on the back of the book cover for this podcast. Phil Bork. You know, and the thing about Lindros is now we're like year five or year six of the full-on PR assault from Eric, you know, doing the interviews and glad-handing and doing the NHLPA stuff and everything else and trying to get in. I mean, we've talked about that ad nauseum on this podcast. Like, Lindros is a Hall of Famer. Like, Hall of Fame, it's the operative – well, the operative word should be Hall because, I mean, it technically is kind of a Hall. But it's also fame. And you know, for that stretch, brief as it was – ain't nobody better in that game than Eric Lindros. Changed the game. Teams had to change the way they were built to handle Eric Lindros. And injuries are what they are. And I think the fact that the way he played the game contributed to those injuries, and I think that's one of the reasons why people are hesitant to support him for the Hall of Fame. I'm not going to go as far as say self-inflicted. I probably used that term before. It's kind of harsh. But there's no question that the way he played the game, the way he skated, the way he thought that he could physically dominate people like he dominated them in junior is part and parcel why he suffered as many concussions as he did. That said, just brilliantly talented. And for a 3 or 4 year stretch, best, top two, whatever you want to call it, players in the game. Hall of Famer for sure. Game show for Thursday or the Friday, whichever you prefer, coming up in a second or two, and a legend of game show, of the game show gimmick.
He's there, bud.
Matt Riegler is going to be on. And I understand he's there now, so let's play the intro that's always too loud. Of course. It's a slow build. Joining us now for, what is it, Riegler, your third appearance or second appearance all time on Game Show for the Friday?
I think it's third, but I don't know how to count that high, so I'm not really sure.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta include the toes. I apologize for Merrick not being here. He's in Red Deer covering the Memorial Cup, so it's just me and you for a private conversation and a little game show action. Can you give us a sense of what's going on in the life of MVSW fan favorite Matt Riegler these days?
Sure. Currently looking for a new apartment. So if any of you live in New York City and want to live in Brooklyn or Manhattan, hey, I need a roommate. Other than that, I got like four jobs. Still doing my thing over at Roto-World NHL. I just picked up a column for SiriusXM covering the NHL playoffs.
Oh, and, nice.
Yeah, it comes out every Wednesday. Google me. I work for MLB Events Media as well. That's my main study at the moment. So, life's pretty good, buddy. Now I get to spend time with you, and I think that's the best treat of all, don't you?
Now, is SiriusXM going to do the smart thing and put you on the air?
Uh, Yeah, I think that they will. When I think I need to have that conversation with them first. So I think they're testing me out in a written form. And then we can advance up to the spoken form. Maybe, you know what? Maybe this is my audition for it. Oh my God, Greg, what if they're listening right now?
Riegler, that's a little extra layer of pressure on you then to excel at game show for the Friday, because if you don't, then perhaps they would say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. He can't answer trivia questions. He may not deserve to have a show on our network.
You know what? I'll just have to restart Born to Puck with Jacob Bourne, and we'll just go do our own thing. And then maybe if we work really hard over a few years, we can pop over to, what's that thing called again? Oh, yeah, The Nerdist. And The Nerdist could have a show called Born to Puck. I mean, I think that's the real way
to
play right
now. I don't know. I have a feeling that Nerdist feels like one hockey podcast is one hockey podcast too many. But who knows?
But come on, the puns. We're not talking about hockey.
I know, that's the puns too. What are your impressions of the playoffs? I don't know who your picks were beforehand, but are you impressed with the final four that we have here in the 2016 Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah, I think this has been one of the more ideal scenarios that we could have hoped for. Three of the four teams, not St. Louis, are really exciting and fun to watch. And for a bunch of different reasons. You know, Pittsburgh has all of the talent, it seems, on the East Coast. And Tampa is succeeding despite some of their top talent not being healthy enough to play. You got San Jose, who's pulling, Greg, help me out. Oh, Major League. They're pulling a Major League where they're winning in spite of their general manager who tried to blow the thing up. That's always awesome. I'm kind of hoping they have a life-size billboard of Doug Wilson in a swimsuit, and they're just pulling out layers.
So he is the Rachel Phelps of the Sharks in the Major League reference you're making.
I mean, is he not? I mean, can you go any other way? And then, you know what? I wouldn't be upset if the Blues won. It has nothing to do with the Blues. It has everything to do with my buddy Jake, who I just mentioned. It's always fun to see your friends be happy because their team won a championship. I mean, my Rangers are out. What do I really care? I don't really hate the Penguins, because the longer they play, the more I get to watch that awesome team. And if Phil Kessel wins, dude, the hockey world's gonna explode. Come on. If the battle potato lifts the Stanley Cup, the hockey world doesn't know what to do with itself. It just doesn't know what to do with itself. It doesn't know if to stand or sit or cry or laugh or cheer or scream. And you'll see YouTube videos of people trying to do each of those things at once.
To go back to one of your many points you just made, I struggle every year. I struggle every year with whether or not I want my friends in Washington to be happy. That's like I want Ovechkin to be happy, and there's a couple of Caps fans that I'd like to see happy, but there's a lot of Caps fans that I kind of secretly enjoy their misery every year.
Well, I'm in agreement with you there. I would love to see Scotty Waz crack a smile for a change, and
right.
The Tonto boys definitely deserve their
JP
happiness.
From Japers Rink, he's been a good soldier for the Capitals for a very long time. It'd be great to see him finally get a chance to attend a cup parade. But there's a few others that I've bumped into here and there in my time in D.C. where I'm like, you know, I could care less.
But here, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but here's the big delineation that you, Gregory Wyshynski, need to decide upon whether or not you're going to cheer for the Capitals to be successful. Do you care more about your loved ones or voting? Because if you care more about your loved ones, then you're going to root for the Capitals. If you care about voting, you probably can't root for the Capitals, because to see the nation's capital be in a happy way is probably worse than Donald Trump being president.
Well, you know, we try to keep politics off the podcast, Riegler. So, I mean, let's not dabble.
Fine. Okay.
Honestly, I don't care.
About politics.
I
thought it was a good joke.
No. Seriously, we try to keep things on the level here. We try to keep out, you know, controversial things. That said, the Catholics, really. No, kidding. Game show for Friday, Riegler. you gave me some categories here, and we're gonna get through them, and we're gonna do this thing, and as you know, it's Game Show Friday 2.0 or 3.0. I forget how many .0s we've had now. But we play five rounds. You have to get three questions correct. You get the choice of which questions you want to answer. That's the way we play this game. If you win, producer Sam will dig into the Sportsnet prize closet and dig up something to give you and send you. Are you ready to play Game Show Friday for the Friday, sir?
I've been ready for like a year and a half now, bud. That's how long it's been.
All right, here we go. Your first round. Your choices are the New York Rangers, recent trade history, and a category you suggested after giving me your initial three choices that I kind of liked, guess the American. Which question would you like?
I mean, it wouldn't be American of me not to go with the American.
All right. I'm going to give you three names here, and you tell me which of these players was born in the United States of America. Donald Audette, Donald Brashear, or Donald Sweeney? Audette, Brashear, Sweeney. Who is the American?
Sorry, you reminded me of something funny I watched recently that involved Donald Duck. I'll send you the email later. Oh my god, it's a parody, it's hilarious. If I do recall correctly, it's Sweeney, because I'm pretty sure Audette is French, Brashear is Canadian. And then that just leaves Sweeney.
So Don Sweeney is your answer.
Yes, sir.
Well, I have to tell you, sir, that your answer is unfortunately incorrect. Don Sweeney from St. Stephen, Canada. Donald Brashear actually born in Bedford, Indiana.
I don't know what to do with this information. This doesn't compute.
44 years old, Donald Brashear, Bedford, Indiana is the answer you're looking for. So 0 for 1, that's okay. You've got four more rounds to go and just need three answers to win. Second round.
Really? Do I have to double check you? Like, really?
I literally just searched it to make sure I'm right as we were doing it. Donald Brashear, right, Bedford, Indiana. Round two, wacky NHL stories, the politics of Jeremy Roenick, or NHL playoff stats?
I mean, you got to go with JR.
All right. I know I just said we keep politics off the show, but here we are. Of whom did Jeremy Roenick, National Hockey League analyst for NBC Sports Network, of whom did he say this of in March 2016? Quote, "He cares about America, and he wants to make sure that the people get into this country legally. If you call that racist, so be it."
Well, I recently... So when I was writing my column yesterday, I went down a wormhole under his Twitter, and the only politician I recall him being photographed with is Donald Trump. Now, I don't follow politics that much, but I'm going to go with that because I think that's also the funniest application to the answer.
That is absolutely correct. Roenick was a big Marco Rubio supporter because Rubio was so young and so enthusiastic. He was into that. But now he is friends with Trump. And all we know about where he's going to vote this November is that he's not going to vote for Hillary or Bernie. So I guess we can assume that if Trump's the nominee, he'll vote for Donald Trump. So you're one for
two. It is what it is.
You're one for two. This is exciting. Round three, your choices are NHL free agents, name the backup goalie, or defunct minor league team names.
What was the first one again? I'm sorry.
That's okay. NHL free agents was the first one. Name the backup goalie or defunct minor league team names.
I could probably get the the free agent. So let's go with the backup goalies. I don't know my goalies as well.
Oh, you're going to challenge yourself. Okay, well, this is a very simple question. I'm going to name a goalie, and you tell me who his backup is. Are you ready?
Sure, let's do it.
Jonathan Quick of the Los Angeles Kings.
Jonas Enroth.
Nice! Well done, sir. Knock that one out of the park. You could go ahead and spell it. Why don't you show off a little bit?
All right. Well, hold on. Let me take off my shirt. or should I say pants? I'm not wearing any pants. That's my favorite Clerks line of all time. Where are my pants? Jonasenroth.
That's absolutely correct. You get nothing for it, but that was an amazing display of knowing how to spell a player's name.
Especially a non-American.
There you go. So now you've gotten two correct. This is very exciting. You need one more to win the game. Round four, your choices are the New York Rangers, recent trade history, and Sidney Crosby facts. Which one would you like?
All right. I think I want to go with Crosby, but it's under one specific pretense. Is this sort of like Chuck Norris facts, but with Crosby, or
no.
Are these real Crosby facts?
No, these are real Sidney Crosby facts. This is not like Sidney Crosby once wrestled a tiger and the tiger pooed because it's afraid of Sidney Crosby. No, it's not like that.
Oh, I was kind of hoping that was a Briz story, and we just that was a wormhole that sounded exciting. Let's go with the Rangers.
I once saw Sidney Crosby fight a tiger, and the Chinese police arrested him for poaching the tiger.
You have to be the best. You have to be the best storyteller to children. like all elementary school age children must love you.
You see, that's funny. That's funny because when I read stories to my 6-year-old kid, I no sell it. Like I don't do like a bunch of voices and stuff. I just like read it straightforward. I'm so bored and I just want the kid to fall asleep that I'm not like, you know, and I'll huff and I'll puff. I'm just I'll huff, I'll puff, I'll blow your house down, whatever, et cetera, pigs, whatever.
Well, I think we just sort of unraveled a way for you to enjoy bedtime with your kids, to kind of get interested.
Yeah. By not treating it as a chore and putting as much energy as I do into a effing game show on a podcast as I do putting my child to sleep. Well, yeah, that'd be pretty good.
Or you know, just have Sneakers do it because she'll just whimper and whine and then lick her to death and that'll be great. Like
exactly.
Everybody will love that.
Exactly. All right. So which one do you want? You want Rangers trade history or Crosby fact?
Rangers, trade history, please, my man.
Okay, here we go. Multiple choice. Which one of these players is not in the New York Rangers all-time top 10 for points as a Ranger? Yeah. As a Ranger. Points as a Ranger. A, Mark Messier. B, Adam Graves. C, Ron Greschner. D, Phil Esposito. Which one is not in the top 10 all-time for points scored as a New York Ranger?
So that really boils down to, if I can remember accurately, how long Espo played for the Rangers versus a defenseman who spent most of his career. You know, I'm really not sure, but I'm gonna err on the side of defenseman who probably topped out at like 50 points in a season versus S. Yeah, I'm just gonna go with Greschner.
The name we were looking for is actually Phil Esposito. Greschner, number 7 all time in points as a Ranger, 610. Esposito topped out at 404. Adam Graves is actually number 10 at 507. So you are not correct, sir. We go to a fifth round on Game Show Friday. This is very exciting.
Just like extra innings for the fans. It's free Game Show Friday.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Your categories are free agents, recent trade history, or defunct minor league team names.
Let's go with free agents.
All right, here we go. Big finish, ladies and gentlemen. This is exciting. Oh, everybody, it's a Game 7 atmosphere here on Game Show for Friday with Matt Riegler.
NHL, drum roll, please.
No, no drum rolls, please. NHL free agents is the category, and here you go. Rank these pending unrestricted free agents by their current salary cap hit from lowest to highest. Again, rank these pending UFAs by their current salary cap hit. We want the lowest hit first, the highest hit last. And the names are, in alphabetical order, Brian Campbell, Dan Hamhuis, Keith Yandel. So you got a Cam, a Ham, and a Yan. Campbell, Hamhuis, Yandel.
God.
Lowest cap hit to highest cap hit currently.
God, this sounds like Passover dinner. Can a Ham and Ham.
So Ham would be at the Passover dinner, is what you're trying to say. I take it you've not spent much time at a synagogue, Matt Riegler.
Listen, the thing with keeping kosher is that it's more tradition than it is health regulation as it originally started. And now with modern amenities, we can cook things properly. So it doesn't matter that the swine rolls around in its own filth. We can, like, cook it properly. So
yeah,
like, why are we scared?
Yeah. You want to dig on swine, as the great Jules from Pulp Fiction once said. Or it was actually Travolta. Oh, who cares? Campbell, Hamhuis, Yandel, rank them from lowest cap hit to highest cap hit.
Okay. So I have the order. I want to ask you one question, but not about this. Have you seen the guys who did Pinky and the Brain, the voices of Pinky and the Brain, read a segment of Pulp Fiction?
No, I haven't yet, but I'll do check that out. If and when this podcast ever ends.
Alright. So Campbell, Hamhuis, Yandel. So it would go Hamhuis, Yandel, Campbell. From least to most.
Hamhuis, Yandel, Campbell.
Oh wait, hold on. Wait. Is that Yandel's full freight? Between the two teams, between Arizona and New York, or
yes.
Just with New York?
It's the full freight.
Oh. Okay. All right. Then my answer doesn't change.
That's a great question. That would be a very sneaky thing to do. But we are not being sneaky here. You are correct, sir. Dan Hamhuis, $4.5 million. Keith Yandel, $5.25 million. And of course, Brian Campbell, the biggest cap hit at $7.1 million, a cap hit we all assume will be a much smaller next contract. Matt Riegler, it has taken you seemingly years to get back on Game Show for Friday, but here you are, and you are a champion, sir.
All I can do is say thank you to you, to producer Sam, and to Jeffy, whenever he gets around to hearing this, and to the rest of the MBSW community. That includes Section 328 community and Melissa Bergeson, who hosted me last year, on two glorious trips to Raleigh and Calgary and Banff. And this is the shit, man. It doesn't get any better.
Indeed,
it really doesn't.
Hey, Riegler, are you going to make it up to our live podcast at the NHL draft?
Do you want me to?
Of course. Why wouldn't you?
Then I guess I'm going to have to take some vacation time.
Please do. It'd be fantastic to have you there, and we're going to have a huge live podcast and a huge big party as well. All right. Congratulations, Riegler. It's great to have you back on the show, and we'll talk to you down the line.
Yeah. Hey, one more thing, though. I really would like to say thank you to you. For the inspiration that you've been to me, and I know I've expressed this to you on a couple of different times, and also the culture that you've and Jeff have helped cultivate through this podcast. It's not something one could ever genuinely imagine. This is more than anyone could ever ask for. It's so friendly, it's so much fun, and you're awesome. I owe you a couple of beers. I'd like you to pick me up on that one of these nights. By the way, I built an apartment. Do you want to see it?
I'm sorry, I fell asleep. Did you, what was that? Did you just give your Twitter handle?
Yeah, so it's at Riegler, MattAssholey.
Listen, I love you. You're the best, and that's very sweet of you to say. And I'm just happy that, you know, over the years, you know, folks like you have been able to support the show as you have and participate in the show as you have. And I'm happy that the silly podcast that we continue to do when it's not eaten by computers is able to, you know, bring people together and everybody still digs it.
Hey, keep up the great work over at Nerdist. With Lozo and what you're doing on Yahoo in the written form with the rest of the gang, man. It doesn't get any better than this.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say. And you're the best, too. And if we ever have a tournament of champions, you'll obviously be a top seed.
I just want a hug.
All right. Please go.
Can we end this? Great, or...
Yeah, the great Matt Riegler, ladies and gentlemen. Please talk to Sam for your prize. About right. I think we were about to get by regular. I thought we were about to get into some level of solicitation there. Is what was going to happen. All right, that's MVSW for this Thursday. Back next week. I'm going to start traveling. Maybe I'll be a little bit of a traveling man. Starting next week for conference finals coverage. No, I'm definitely going to be game five boy, not game four boy. I don't think, but game five boy. And then after that, you know, full speed ahead into that Stanley Cup final whenever it starts. I wish the NHL would just kind of, like, give the dates and stuff. Which is like this Memorial Day weekend thing happening here in the States, and you're wondering about, like, when you need to F off from that barbecue and go to Media Day, but whatever. Anyways, thanks to Merrick. Thanks to Phil Bork for some straight fire. And for the upcoming Puck Daddy post on that straight fire about NBC. And thanks to Riegler for playing along on Game Show for the Friday. And thanks to all of you. Thanks for sticking with this stupid podcast. Stuff happens technologically wise. Stuff happens travel wise and time wise and everything else. But Merrick and I genuinely appreciate your continued support of MVSW and everything we do. So thanks. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye. Thank you.